Hey there, friends. Before we get to a brand new episode of the official Do Good Better podcast, we want to thank you, the listener, for subscribing and sharing with all of your nonprofit friends. Most importantly, we need to be thanking the sponsors to this very show. Hey, if you're in the market for a CRM system that makes your life easier, there is no better item in your fundraising toolbox than DonorDoc. DonorDoc is not only the premier sponsor to the show, it is the premier and intuitive CRM system that not only has everything you want, but has zero things you don't. No one needs complicated, especially when you wear 10,000 different hats at your nonprofit. So get DonorDoc and use Do Good Better at checkout and get a month free to try it out. Thanks, DonorDoc, for being an awesome sponsor. Hey, speaking of life being easier, fundraising is not. And as a listener to this podcast, I hope you found some insight and tips and tricks on how to make it a little less challenging. But if you're looking for a more content, more done-for-you templates, weekly support, and a community of other do-gooders like yourself to either commiserate, challenge, co-create, or celebrate with, join Do Good University. Hey, it's our brand new membership site. We have hours and hours of on-demand trainings, exclusive guest expert webinars, and access to the entire Do Good Better crew to answer all of your pressing questions. All of that is for an affordable monthly fee. So visit dogooduniversity.com or click the link in the show notes for details. Hey, get ready for another episode of the official Do Good Better podcast. Hey, nonprofit leader, you do awesome nonprofit things. And our friends at Pro Resources do awesome HR things. Now, why is that important? Because you have too many things to do than worry about payroll and compliance and benefits and admin and workers' comp. You've got donors to get, you've got clients to serve, and you've got a community to make awesome. So let our friends at Pro Resources help you. Go to ProResourcesHR.com. Learn about how they can help your organization not worry about all the HR things. They've got you covered. Go to ProResourcesHR.com. Let them help you be awesomer at HR while you become awesomer as a nonprofit. ProResourcesHR.com or call them at 800-776-4671 and make sure you mention Do Good Better. Get your special nonprofit rate.
Welcome to the official Do Good Better podcast, where we help small and medium-sized nonprofits do good better. Join host Patrick Kirby as he chats about the latest nonprofit trends, challenges, and success stories. Plus, you'll get actionable advice to help you be even awesomer. If you're a nonprofit professional, volunteer, or supporter, this show is for you. We'll tackle all the big topics like fundraising, marketing, and volunteer management. Our only goal? To bring you the information and inspiration you need to take your organization to the next level. So grab that giant caffeinated or adult beverage and get ready to do good better.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the official Do Good Better podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Kirby. And of course, we talk with people who are going to help our small and medium-sized nonprofits do good better. One of my favorite times when I get to do this podcast is when I get to welcome all of my super cool friends. And one of the best groups and organizations and businesses that I get to work with in the nonprofit realm is our friends from One Cause. And they are stopped by specifically today to talk about their 2024 fundraising outlook report, which they have put an enormous amount of effort into. And if you're an organization that's doing events, has done events, or planning to do events, this is the episode that you want to bookmark and come back to over and over again. You're going to get some highlights of what they have seen. They've seen some things, man, and they've seen some stuff. And they're going to put a little bit of predictive, what's the future hold for all things event and fundraising. And I'm stoked to have our guest today, Sarah Sebastian, Steve Lausch.
Hi.
Welcome to the official Do Good Better podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. We're super excited to be here. You make it sound like I have a crystal ball, which I don't, but I will do my best to forecast based on some of the data that we have for sure.
It's going to be fun. And Steve, I always like chatting with you because, listen, data, your data nerds unite, right? I mean, this is where we take a look at all the super cool things that have been reported out to us.
And then we get to kind of forecast a little bit based on actual data rather than guessing on what's about to occur, right?
Absolutely. And what's so great about this study, and you've been so great to have us on in years past, Patrick, you know this, it's part descriptive, it's part prescriptive, it's part predictive. And so we'll try to bring as much practical application to all of the findings, but some of the fun is just looking at the data and seeing what nonprofits are saying that's going well and not going well and where they want to go and how they want to do it.
One of the coolest moments is when, and again, if you don't get an opportunity, if you haven't gotten the opportunity to go to RAISE, which is their big conference they do every single year, you get a sneak preview at all of this little information. And it is some of the most fascinating numbers that you almost have a gut instinct of like what might be happening. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, yep, either proven or holy crap, I didn't even know that that was going to be a thing. So before we get diving into pretty much some of the coolest things that you're going to hear about events and what happened and what we can think about in the future for 24 and beyond is I think people need to know you again. If they haven't listened to a previous episode where you guys have hopped on, I would like you to give a 5,000 foot view on who you are, what you do, and why we're talking today. Sarah, you get to go first.
All righty then. Well, I'm Sarah Sebastian. I'm the Director of Corporate Communications at OneCause, and OneCause is a fundraising software company. You may know from long ago, we got our start as BidPal, first to market with mobile bidding. So auctions and events have been a specialization for a long time. But we have a broad range of fundraising solutions for all the nonprofits out there. Great fit for small and medium nonprofits, fundraising pages, peer-to-peer, text to give, all the good stuff. And we do feel very strongly about putting out this research and content to kind of help nonprofits as well. That's part of our commitment to helping everybody build those better tomorrows. So we're here to help however we can.
I love it. Steve, tell me about yourself, please.
Well, I joined OneCause back in, actually this coming March will make 7 years, and I can't believe it. 7 years. Prior to that, did some work in tech as well, but more on the automotive retail tech side of the world, if you can believe that. So very grateful to be in the nonprofit segment, very grateful to be helping to change the world with some amazing nonprofits. I think we're up to working with 11,000 of them over the years since we started in 2008. And Sarah, what's our proceeds raise up to now?
Over $6 billion.
Over $6 billion. Yep. That's a shout out to all the wonderful nonprofits that we get to work with. So we just get to ride on their coattails, so to speak.
Pretty ridiculous. Okay, so if you're new to the OneCause world, if you are new to listening to Sarah and Steve talk about this, let's give it a little bit of overview on the fundraising outlook report. Why have you been doing this in the first place? How long? Give me the kind of who, what, where, when, why of this particular report.
Yeah, I can dive in on that, Patrick. So this is nothing new. We've been running this for about 6 years, I think we've been developing this report and putting it out as a turning that survey into a report for the last 4 years. And that's the fundraising outlook report that folks can download today and dive into it. So we start, you mentioned the RAISE conference. Thanks for doing that, because awesome conference. One of the things we fold into that experience is we launch the annual survey that from which we derive this report, right? We do that at RAISE. It's in the market for 1 month. It is self-reported. So nonprofits are saying, hey, let me in on this. I'll tell you what's going on in my world. Let's join up with about 900 other nonprofits and see what turns out. So that's exactly what happens. We looked at nonprofits of all shapes, sizes, segments, full-time employee counts, annual operating revenue from the smallest of the small, which always cheering them on to the biggest of the big with, AORs over 50 million. But what's exciting, Patrick, is we're getting respondents that are executive directors, development directors, VPs, event directors, and VPs, all the right people who have an influence in how technology works and is acquired in their nonprofit and how the day-to-day engages with that technology so they can engage their donors. So it's a fantastic wealth of information to turn around and say, in fact, I'll just give you the number. This year, we had 939 unique nonprofits speak into what we're going to talk about today.
One of the things I love most about this report and where you draw this from and how you get the information is that, again, it's 900 plus organizations. There's an honesty to the answers, right? There's no one's trying to position themselves as like, look at how good we did, right? So the information that you're gathering is a reality that's what's going on the ground, right? With no one trying to posture to like, look at us and how well we're doing, or I need to say this because my board is looking out for it. So that's what makes this information so good. So what kind of, as an overview, kind of, we'll start kind of big, we'll sort of narrow it down to kind of what's the big super findings, but what's kind of an overview of the big findings that you found in this particular Outlooking report?
Yeah, sure. I'll run through. We have like four main findings, and we kind of dig in a little bit into various areas within those. We'll start with probably some event and online fundraising today. We'll talk about a little bit. We know it's instrumental in helping nonprofits meet their goals. We want to talk a little bit about kind of those in-person events. We're seeing during the pandemic, you know, people did not know what they were going to do. You didn't know what was going to happen. We saw just a huge boost of confidence in kind of choosing event formats. And that has just shot up this year. People feel way more, you know, confident and just determined to have those in-person events right now. We are going to talk a little bit about all of the challenges that folks are facing. We've heard a lot. You've probably heard a lot about what's going on. Those donor kind of focused challenges, they reoccur every year, but there's a little bit something different behind them every year. Donor engagement, donor acquisition, et cetera. And recurring giving was big this year too. And then we want to talk a little bit about AI too. So those are some of our main topics and some of the key findings that we ran through. And I think if we can start with the event and online fundraising and dig in a little bit, move from there. Can I talk about that a little? Are you ready?
born ready. Yeah. So the online stuff is really interesting, especially when it comes to auctions, which is what I find the most fascinating, right? Mm-hmm. So, and again, everybody wants to be in person, but walk me through that, because I think when people are making a decision as to if they're going to do an event, how they're going to position the event, where do you go? What do we do? Right? There's so many options. Let's use some data behind it to kind of help us and our board and our committees make some decisions. What do you find?
Sure. I can at least tell you right now, 83% of the folks that we did survey this year said that they did hold an in-person event in 2024. So the majority of nonprofits are doing that. They're feeling confident. And when you think about kind of fundraising revenue and budgeting when it comes to these online events, it makes up the bulk of folks' budget. It just does. 60% of nonprofits this year reported that they raised 21% or more of their annual operating revenue through those event and online fundraising avenues. And for those smaller organizations that have annual operating revenues below $1 million, that shoots up to 70% of organizations are really relying heavily on this event and online fundraising. And
it's part of the pillars, right? You can't do one thing, everything, right? But you've got to balance it a little bit out. And I think if you're not doing an event, or you're not using some of the technology that you have at your disposal that are that help drive some of that money, you're leaving money on the table, and you're not engaging the people who need to be engaged in the first place.
Yeah, was something very interesting that we did find out about this. Some of those smaller organizations we saw when it came to the event and online fundraising performance this year, they actually did better. And that's really unusual over our past years.
Steve. It makes no sense.
Back me up here, Steve.
Not that we really want to go back a couple of years and think about what life was like back in 2020 and 2021, but you know, the data was showing that the smaller nonprofits were struggling more so than their larger counterparts. And I think we're also so aware of that. And so we remember that. But yes, things have turned here. So the medium and large organizations that we surveyed this year, Patrick, they saw anywhere from a 5 to 7 point jump in the number of organizations raising less. So I know I kind of threw two different directions there at you, but more saying we raised less than we anticipated in 2023. And the largest of organizations, those are like AOR of 50 million, like the big ones, fewer of them were reporting that they raised more than they anticipated this year. So while they weren't raising less, the really good ones that were excelling in past years, we're not as many of those. And so it was a very interesting dynamic that Sarah was talking about, whereas our smaller and mid-sized nonprofit, while they were really doing well, this was a great year.
What do you,
we think a year of inflection.
Yeah. Well, what do you attribute that to? Because, you know, it's so counterintuitive, right? I got a bigger marketing budget, bigger things, bigger people, bigger draw. And you've got these smaller groups that are seeing such a jump in event revenue. What do we make out that to be based on data stuff?
Yeah. Well, I was kind of working through and writing this report. I was thinking about our giving experience study, which we do in the spring. And that's when we ask donors for their opinions and if they've attended a recent event and just kind of gauge how they're feeling about things. And part of that study, we ask people what motivates them to give. And this last report in 2023, we saw really a shift back to people saying that the mission of the organization was most important to them. And that was their motivator. They felt this huge connection to the mission. So that was the top generosity motivator in this past report. And I think that is probably translating into people kind of supporting those local, smaller organizations where they can see that direct impact in their own communities. We did ask a question, you know, what makes you trust a nonprofit that you give to in the giving experience as well? And impact was something that came up a lot. And those organizations, they're making impact in local community. We saw that in the responses as well. And from personal experience, at least in my area here in Central Florida, I've seen support increase for a lot of local organizations. They're very small, these grassroots organizations. And part of that may be that feeling of connection too that people are kind of missing out on. There just seems to be this kind of overall fog of people feeling disconnected since the pandemic. And I think connecting with those local organizations is really helping them too. So just some thoughts around that. Have you seen any of this?
It's interesting because I think clarity of storytelling, clarity of impact, and I think matching, I know where my money is because I can see where it's going sort of mentality, I think helps a lot. And those smaller organizations, I think, have a better sense of confidence about themselves than they did trying to play with or try to compare themselves to the big organizations, right? There seems to be this like, you know what? We are awesome and we do awesome things and we're amazing. And there is that little shoulder up a little bit attitude you can kind of see with the scrappy, smaller nonprofits that said, and I think it comes down to this, and you experience it at Raise and you experience this with any one of the webinars that One Cause does, there's a sense of, if not us, who? Attitude of a lot of these nonprofits of like, well, of course we're going to go to the walls with these kind of events or these stories that we're going to tell, because if we don't do it, nobody else is going to.
Yeah. And I think there's really a clarity of mission with some of these smaller organizations too. It hasn't been kind of, you know, broken up and kind of, I can't even talk today, watered down. Not trying to insult any of the large organizations, but they're trying to do so much. And I think there really is a focus and a clarity that appeals to a lot of people.
With some of
these and I'm going to piggyback on this too. And the concept, and I'm leaving the world of data here and kind of projecting, extrapolating, if you will, from what we see in the data to maybe a little bit of conjecture, but roll with me here and feel free to agree, disagree. But I think what we saw in 22 is the fact that while we are emerging from this struggle that we all know collectively as the pandemic. And when they sat down, these large organizations sat down for their planning at the end of 22, beginning of 23, it's time to get back.
Yeah.
Back big. And you know what? We may have, here's the conjecture, we may have set the sights a little high. Mm-hmm. And then for various reasons, different challenges, which we can dive into some of that data, just wasn't able to deliver.
Yeah.
Or we didn't have the donor base engaged at that level. Or for whatever reason, Patrick, we just ended up raising less than we had projected. Mm-hmm. Just a thought.
Yeah. No, I think it's totally well, and assuming that everybody was on the same page, I think is the detriment to a lot of the organizations that want to set these bars high. And they have not done the due diligence of having the conversations, asking their donors questions, bringing them along, or spending a lot of time curating a relationship over the time or in between events and just assuming everybody remembered that they had a great time or they made an impact or et cetera, when we all know that people have the attention span of fruit flies now And they need constant reminders in the communications or in the way that we interact with them in order to bring them along as quickly as we think we're going to. It's a totally legit. I agree with you 100%. You've done a lot of these questions with what the events are doing better. And I think a lot of nonprofits get to the point where like, okay, this sounds great. And if they're starting an event or they're tweaking an event, what types stood out as winners when it comes to how well we're doing in the event fundraising world? I think people are always trying to figure out what's the best way to do this. If we're going to put time, energy, effort, and money into a thing, what's the best ROI or that you kind of saw that kind of made 2023 what it was?
Yeah, I can weigh in on that. So in-person auction events and golf outings, that's where I would say those were the strongest performers for 2023. It was the same as last year, but we're seeing the success of that continue to swell. Half of the respondents, in fact, rated in-person auctions as a very successful. And these would be, any kind of event. Could be breakfast, lunch, gala, anything that has some sort of auction capability when you're in person. And we also saw that nonprofits who employed either an in-person or a mix of virtual and in-person fundraising, those were among those most likely to meet their fundraising goals for the year versus those who didn't hold the events or that maybe they just didn't come back from 2021, 2022, or they only hold virtual events. Patrick, was interesting as well. Yeah. So, and I always want to add a quick little caveat because I know we're going to have listeners and you have great audience, who's maybe dialing in today and thinking, well, wait a minute, we have certain reasons why we can't go back in person or we're not quite ready to go back in person yet. That understood, all that taken into consideration. But if you're the average nonprofit out there and you're listening today and you want to make sure in 2024 that you're at or above your fundraising goal for the year, get back in person in some level of capacity there. Sarah, anything to add?
Yeah, I do want to touch on the golf events briefly. I know it sounds super rosy. They were like the second most successful. They have a really high return on investment, but there was kind of a slip. There's a little decrease in the number of nonprofits that did describe them as very successful. So it's kind of something to keep an eye on. And this is kind of an overall sentiment that I want to touch on. We did see in the Giving Experience study that people reported they were experiencing lower levels of overall event satisfaction in general. So looking for new ways to kind of inject life into these events is probably necessary. And we've heard, just through talking to various nonprofits, there are some that are saying, I don't know, our events outdated. And then there's some, we're seeing this great success. I think there needs to be kind of a shift in the way people are thinking about events. Don't think about them as traditional. You don't have to hold a traditional gala. Think about your audience. Try to build more of a community appeal into this. Think about the people that you are serving and how you can pull them into that event and have them be a part of that experience in that community. And that's going to inject some new life into it. And that's a really high level overview of what I think needs to happen with events. But they're still successful. There just needs to be a bit of a change in the way that they're held and the way people are looking at their ideal audiences for these events.
Well, and I think we're the most successful. And I MC a ton of events throughout the year, right? Mm-hmm. And most of the events that hold a fund-a-need aspect to their event itself, skyrocketing.
Yeah.
Because it's purposeful and meaningful and it's different and it's new and you don't have to, you're selling the mission and impact. Kind of what you're saying of like, hey, these small nonprofits that are faring better, that are doing better, the impact stories are great because they can connect to the community. They're focusing in on why they're at the event itself and giving them an option to donate directly rather than get stuff. And having that ability to do a fund a need in real time and have the software and the ability and the technology to take that on, that has helped. I mean, I'll say it, every single organization that I have worked with when it comes to fund a need stuff has gone up. Every one of them.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would venture to guess, as I look at the data here, I just pulled it up on my other screen, that roughly 70% of the respondents said, hey, we're doing those donation events, fund-a-need events, appeal events. Yep. And then for those that are saying, hey, well, I'm looking at our customer data that said 90% participated in an event that held an auction.
Yeah.
Not suggesting that it is void of an appeal. I wanted to be very clear on that.
No.
I think that appeal is huge, right?
Yeah.
And again, you can see it and you can feel it in the room, and you can actually, when you're telling that impact story that leads into the actual ask. Because again, most of these organizations are not hesitant on making asks, right? They don't want to hide just generally behind maybe like, hey, look at this cool thing you can bid on and then send it out to the world. And everybody can, you know, has the ability to bid on things that may not have shown up at the event, which is still one of the most stunning things that you can do as an organization. It's great. But you have that vibe in the room when you say, listen, here's the goal. Together, we're going to make it here. Who's willing to stand up and step up? And you can just, this overwhelming want to participate in that is so fantastic. It's so palpable in every event that we've been doing recently.
Mm-hmm. And there's some really interesting things. And Sarah, maybe you want to key in on this a little bit more, but there's some really interesting trends as well. We researched those pursuing funding through online fundraisers as well as in-person fundraisers. But we're starting to see that gap between the two lessen. We're starting to see more online campaigns preceding that appeal that you're talking about, Patrick, and then even launching from the night of the event into maybe personal fundraising pages or some other derivative online campaigns that make the event even more, it's a multiplier effect.
It doesn't stop with the night. So this, I love what you said there too, because I think we get into our brains that the event itself is the be all end all. It's the start of these wonderful relationships you get to breathe, you know, sort of preview and grow over the year. So when they come back, they're even more dedicated to you the year after. And I think there's such a great bunch of resources of like, now that you've seen what we've done, here are another ways that you can help support us. And if we don't ask them to help us do that, or we don't offer them the option, well, mm-hmm. then they're not going to do it.
Yeah. I was talking to, and shout out to her, Samantha Swaim from Swaim Strategies. And she was telling me about the storytelling aspect that you were just mentioning, like a nonprofit can really capitalize on that right now. So she was talking about really getting people into the room and telling these very just eloquent, emotional stories. And people are really responding to that. And it's their responsibility to kind of take that storytelling and carry it into those post-event pieces that you're talking about to keep people engaged. So don't just plan your stories for day of, figure out how to weave them into your follow-up to show that impact too. Yep.
One of the best things. And again, I'm going to shout to the rooftops of how much I like One Cause, because I just do all the time anyway. One of the things that you can do as a fundraiser, an executive director, and a board member is take a look at the data of the people who gave the night of, and you can build a story on who they are, why they showed up, and build these wonderful follow-up conversations to each one of them. I think a lot of nonprofits get too done. They're done with the event and they take a deep breath and go, okay, that was fun. We'll just deal with it next year. Instead of saying, okay, what happened from last year to this year? Who jumped up? Who fell off? Who didn't show? Like, you build a fundraising plan around the data you have with this.
I love it.
Right?
I mean, I love it.
The genius here is you get to take all this data that we're just talking about today, and then what do you do with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes me think of a success story on our website, which we have an entire library of resources, Beyond Success Stories, ebooks, etc., free downloads. Go to it, audience, download it and learn. But there's one from Jackie Jordan Welker from, I'm going to give a shout out since we're giving shout outs today, from Make-A-Wish Eastern, North Carolina. And she specifically does exactly what you're talking about, Patrick, and made a point when we had our interview with her. And she said, through that data, I get to understand who came, why, how to follow up with them. And it is one of the greatest ways of data capture she can use. It's the actual event.
Yep.
It's the actual event.
Yep. And you will hear me talk about this. You're going to hear a lot of people who are paying attention to talk about this, is that the hyper-personalization of your soliciting power in 2024 and beyond, you have to do it. You have to know who comes to your event. You have to know what their giving patterns are. You have to know the name of their dog before you ask them a major gift, because it means you're paying attention to their personality rather than their checkbook. And I think this is such a great way to use all of this information for good that doesn't end with good night, we'll see you next year. It actually starts with it. And I feel like I know we're being like super positive about like, hey, do an event. Mm-hmm. Deep breath, because I know there's a lot of people who went through some challenges this year. And I mm-hmm. think one of the cool things about the report is that you don't gloss over some of the challenging pieces to this. And I think we it would behoove us to address some of it, because how do we take what was a challenge and how do we fix it or how do we address it for 24 and beyond? So yeah. What are some of the big things that popped up? Are like, hey, this seems to be an issue, or we want to look at it more carefully if you're a nonprofit working in the event space.
Yep, absolutely. So we ask about challenges that nonprofits face in 2023. So just think about how 2023 really went down. Economic uncertainty. Is there going to be a recession? Will there not be a recession? We don't really know what's going to happen. Oh my goodness. Story of our lives for the past few years, right? It's just continuing. We also had that rare decline in individual giving that was reported in Giving USA. And we saw those top challenges were really tied to sustainability and those donor sentiment pieces I mentioned earlier. Nonprofits want to feel secure, and it seems like donors are tired, basically.
Yep. And so, we captured this in, I don't know, what is it, Sarah, like 12, 13 different challenges that mm-hmm. we ask nonprofits to rate, and doing so that it's, hey, Patrick, it's not a problem, or it's somewhat of a problem, or it's a concern, or no, this is mission critical. This is going to take us down if we don't fix it. And you can see everything Sarah was talking about. We saw six top challenges across the board. And then I'm going to zoom in on a kind of a secondary little bit data piece for you, my fellow data nerd. Six top challenges were donor fatigue, donor engagement, recurring giving, year-over-year growth, sponsors. So sponsor acquisition and management, and donor retention. No surprise there. But if you zoom in, and we look just at what is a concern or critical issue that we need to solve, we have recurring giving. I think we were talking just about that. Year over year growth. Hello, larger mega organizations. We talked about that. Mm-hmm. Donor fatigue. These are the big three that stood across a lot of those AORs.
Well, and I think you could take donor fatigue and you can associate it with sponsorship too, right? So if you're a business and you're all, I mean, if you ask any business in your local community, how many appeals they get or sponsorship kits that they get in the mail, mm-hmm. it's they can't keep up. And, and when that is doubled down all the time every year, they're individuals who go to events, but they're also the business owners who have to deal with this as well. That's going to make that donor fatigue feel even more real, because it's twice as heavy to that individual or that person who's running a business too. So I think there's a lot of those components. How do we fix, I mean, again, you can use all the, this is horrible. How do we fix maybe some of that? How do we maybe address the donor fatigue piece with some of the data that we're learning about? Is it a diversifying? Is it adding new names to our list? Is it asking better questions? What are some of the things that are wrapping around in our brains as we're reading some of this data?
Mm-hmm. When you're talking about, the donor fatigue in particular, I think that some of that ties back into the storytelling we were just talking about in the mission centered giving. We've said it, and Steve will absolutely echo this. When donors are engaged, they're connected to your mission, and you're telling these great stories, they're not going to be fatigued. They're going to stay engaged. They're going to continue giving. So it's kind of coming back to your stories. What are you telling to people? Are you completely focused on your mission? Do you have that mission clarity? Are you asking the right people that are connected to your mission? You can't get everybody to give to you. You just cannot. You have to find the right people. Yeah. So there's some effort that does need to go into that as well. And Steve, I want you to talk about diversifying. I know that's your pot of gold there when you're thinking about the fundraising.
I think the one thing I do want to add, and I'm always happy to talk about that, but one thing I want to add here is encouraging our nonprofit listeners to keep the main thing the main thing. What I mean by that is we also asked about donor engagement and is in terms of priorities, like how do we fix this? To your question, Patrick, like, okay, now what are we going to do about this? Yeah. And donor engagement, surprisingly, isn't always that first top of mind priority. Whereas, hey, if we can engage with donors, as Sarah said, if we can have engaged donors, the likelihood of them being fatigued goes way down. Because you know what? I'll talk to you as many times a day if I like you, right? Yeah. And from there, I would say diversifying. We have nonprofits that are saying we are going to consider ways to get more out of our existing campaigns. But we're also seeing nonprofits. I think it's in the 80 percentile. I got to find that stat. Sarah, maybe 82. You have it handy. 82%.
Yep.
82% of nonprofits, which is a great stat, are willing to look for new ways to fundraise. And that's where you get into, Patrick, I'm going to go back to it again. That's where you go into, hey, what does online fundraising mean? Is it just the static donation form on my website? Or are there other campaigns that we can set up and even extend our fundraising power through our most ardent supporters? Can we tie online fundraising to event fundraising in ways that we have not even thought about before? Can we introduce different types of events that will bring different audiences through different mechanisms? Those 82 out of 100 nonprofits that are willing to put in a little extra in that side of the chessboard, I think they're going to find themselves standing at the end of the game.
Well, you wonder how to do that, right? So that sounds like a lot of work. And it is, but if you take a business, for example, or an individual, for example, who loves your mission and who's aligned perfectly, and alignment is going to be another word that you're going to have to tell yourself every mm-hmm. single day in 2024. Am I aligned with this person? Am I aligned with this business? Are they aligned with us? If not, how do we get them there? If they refuse to, ignore it and move on to something else, right? Got to focus in that alignment. But if you can get them to do peer-to-peer fundraising, if you can have them organize an auction so it doesn't have to fall on your shoulders, all of a sudden the world opens up.
Yes.
The amount of people that you can use this technology for or with that doesn't burden you or your committee or your board only, and it engages them the way that they want to be engaged and they feel as if they're contributing in a major way. That mm-hmm. that creativity needs to be sparked. And I don't think any option can be off the table when you're talking about how to grow in that diversified sort of way to counter some of the issues that we're seeing with donor fatigue.
Yep, exactly. And when you're talking about those folks that are aligned, and especially we've seen with social giving, peer-to-peer giving, those are some of the most loyal donors out there. So if you're not trying it yet, perfect timing. Give it a shot. They're going to stick with you. We've seen that increase year over year. They really are loyal donors and want to see engaged with your mission.
And I think even just asking them the questions, I mean, that's another thing too. We assume that they don't want to do this because it's a little bit of extra work. Well, have you asked them? Uh-huh. Have you asked them on what way? And here's a good question. Take this away to back to your board and take this to your next donor meeting is, hey, we're open to a bunch of suggestions, and I'd love your opinion on what a creative way that you maybe haven't seen or no organizations had the audacity to try. How would you, if money wasn't an option, if you had all the time in the world, how would you fundraise and work with them and ideate with them in real time? And don't tell them what you want them to do. Work with them on how mm-hmm. they can help you navigate these crazy muddy waters on what to do next.
Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite questions to ask people, framing it that way. If money wasn't an option, what would you do with X? Because you get some of the best ideas. So I really love that. Yep.
Yeah. Well, and I love that you brought up the board, Patrick, because therein lies a small manageable group who, if you can encourage them and capture their creativity on how to help raise money through these mechanisms of online campaigns, they become the example and the model by which to add concentric circles of your donor base to be able to multiply that effect. Hey, we had 5, 7, 10 people on our board raise this much. Who's joining this next year?
Right. Yep, exactly. It's such a, I think we typically forget about the lowest hanging fruit for the ones that love us the most, because we are always concentrating on new more, mm-hmm. where if we ask those who love us the best ways that they can help us the most, you're going to get the biggest ROI out of the amount of time that you have, because we know you wear 10,000 different hats. And so just work a little simpler. Speaking of working a little simpler, because I want to get to this before we end the podcast, because if anything, over the last number of months, probably the last year and a half, AI AI.
That's all we hear.
Yeah. Shout out to my buddy, Shirin Koshy, because he and I shared a stage at Raise last year to talk about fundraising and AI and some of the ethics that come along with it and what you do and how to. It is the topic, and you cannot get away from it when it comes to like some of these big questions of what to do, how to use it, where to use it, what are we going to... I know you address it here. Mm-hmm. What's kind of the how are organizations navigating this gigantic question that nobody can really give a really clear answer to? And what did you learn from the survey that you kind of reported out on AI in general when it comes to fundraising and events?
Mm-hmm. So organizations are feeling really, really uncertain about AI. Like as I was going through like our data looking at this, I'm like, is this right? Are there really this many people that are uncertain about AI? And it just kept popping up. It was very accurate. But there is a bright side here. A lot of organizations do see and feel that it will benefit the sector. It was around 40% said that they think AI is really going to benefit the nonprofit sector. And 36% also said they did not think that it's overhyped. You know, you hear people saying, oh, don't worry about it. It's going to go away. No, it's not going away. It's here to stay. So they do think it's going to directly impact their fundraising strategies, but people just really don't know how to get started. They don't know how to use it. And an overwhelming number did say about, I think it was 43% said that they just don't know if they have the time or the money to implement it as well. Yeah,
I love this conversation about AI because it reminds me about how we talked about the internet back in the late 90s. And yes, I'm that old. It's like, you know, yes, this will benefit us. And no, we don't know what to think of it. And we probably aren't going to mess with it long term. But no, here we are. And while that uncertainty piece is huge, like 65% not sure if it's going to impact owner privacy or how. Right. I think that's fair. 67% showed uncertainty as to how it might change oversight in the sector. I think that's entirely fair point as well.
Yep.
Because now we're talking about not just entities like our nonprofit organizations managing data. We're talking about computer entities that are automatically processing data in new ways that sometimes we're catching up to. So I think a lot of that uncertainty that we're seeing, Patrick, is unfair, or it is fair and will be an interesting thing to watch as we track this year over year.
Well, I think one of the main concerns is that when you're a nonprofit leader, you're a board member, you're an executive director, especially a fundraiser, you pride yourself on your ability to read people, have empathy. All of these soft skills that you read about AI, and you're like, well, clearly my job is not going to matter anymore. It matters more than ever.
Oh, yeah.
Correct me if the data says otherwise, but I don't think it's going to be the case, which is using AI is a tool that allows you more time to spend more time with your donors, to get to know them better, and then using the information that you gather into whatever AI systems or processes or things that you can work on to get that hyper-personalization and to remind you about all the cool things you learned about that person.
Yep.
And I just feel like that's the crutch to this whole argument on whether people are confused or concerned is the idea that you're needed as a human being to have that real life handshake or a hug or a shoulder to cry on when a donor goes going through a rough patch, or your own coworkers need a little bit of TLC or face to face. Or I mean, you just talked about it when we go to events, right? Everybody wants to be face to face at events because they feel better, right? And I think that you're always going to have this technology is going to take advantage of us and the robots are going to take over the world bit, but you always need a person, and the person-centric fundraising aspect to the nonprofit world will always be, I think, the thing that matters the most.
Definitely. I fully agree with that. I don't think there's a replacement for human interaction, for sure. I mean, I'm an introvert. I work from home, and I know that I feel completely re-energized when I get to meet with my team in person or with friends down the street. It's just something that's hardwired into our brains, that connection with other human beings. And that is not going to be easily replaced anytime soon, in my opinion. I'm sure there are people out there that are like, oh, it's coming. Yeah. But you're needed. Connection is needed. Absolutely.
Well, Sarah, I think about the areas that we surveyed and are captured in the report. And, you know, our audience can download this. Well, I'm sure we'll explain in a couple of minutes how to do that. But Patrick, donor profiles, building donor profiles, fundraising strategy, copywriting for events, for what these are all areas that you can use AI today. And the amount of nonprofits that are using it for those areas are slim, but I can tell you every one of them, no matter if they are using it for copywriting or whatever, they still need that personal touch.
Yep.
They still need that human touch. So if we track this in 2024 and 25, and those numbers start to creep up, as I would suspect they will, that human touch will be ever present. It is perennial. It is needed for all the reasons that the both of you already articulated.
What I love about it, though, again, when you're thinking about time, right? I want more time with donors. I want more time at home. I need more balance in my life. I mean, this is where AI really comes into play specifically. Mm-hmm. And here I'll give, hey, one cost shout out. Let's go. Part of the best part about your software, too, it's got an AI thing where you get to like not have to type in your silent auction item descriptions.
Uh-huh.
And I want it. I want. So it's just OK. If you, the dear audience. For the love of all that is holy, if you only get one cause for this, because I know everybody listening who's done a silent auction who has to spend the 20 hours trying to type in why grandma's mittens are important to the whatever it is, just get it for this, and it will save you so much time and headache. And
hours. I think that's
right. But then you get to take it, and then you can edit. And editing takes so much less time than creating from whole cloth. And there's the real power, I think, in AI. You know, whether it's in just a ChatGPT format, we're trying to create something, or it's looking into one cause and having it create for you some of these amazing descriptions of items that saves you time and energy and mental capacity for
guys. Yeah, I think with AI, and you just touched on it, it's something. We want it to be something that you do not have to put effort in. And I think people are worried that, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to learn all of these new skills, this new skill set. It's going to take me all this time. Well, that's the point. There are things right now in your life that you're using AI and you don't even realize it. Like think about Siri on your phone. It's just become part of your life. Think about Netflix. That AI has become part of your life, their algorithms. And with the auction item description generator, like you just mentioned, PS, it saves about 8 hours of time, we calculated, on an average auction. Like, it doesn't take anything extra. It's built in. You don't have to do anything. And that's how we should be using AI and how technology companies should be building it.
Yep.
So I think there's kind of a mindset shift with some of the nonprofits that needs to happen too, where it's like, okay, it's not this thing I have to learn. It's not another thing on my plate that I have to deal with. There are easy ways to use it in your fundraising, because we found only 10% of nonprofits said they were using AI in their fundraising. And that was stunning. So there's so many easy things you can do with it. And that's just one of them.
Mm-hmm. I think we saw, Sarah, that 43-44% of nonprofits are actually interested in AI, but they don't think they have the time or money to implement it. And I love your point that a lot of this, if in the right technology, just helps do it for you. There is no implementation. So there's another, and I don't mean to turn this on one cause auction stuff, Patrick, but there's one other element too that I want to bring up. Mm-hmm. For example, we have some AI at work that helps recommend lots when Patrick Kirby signs on to his auction, and right at the top, these are perfect for you. Mm-hmm. And we're finding out that it's more than just time saved and headache saved. We're actually seeing proceeds raised, like a 25% increase on those items. So AI is here to stay.
Yeah. Well, and here's the best part. And again, I'll bring this back to the human element too, right?
Ooh.
So imagine you're having an auction and you are having a gala, you're having an auction, you have used One Cause software. It already knows what you've purchased in the past, right? There's still a value in not only having it show up on your phone while you're sort of going through your auction, right? There's still a value going, hey, Steve, so glad to see you at this event. Hey, by the way, I know Captain Bourbon fan over here. We got three more packages that I know you love. They're over there. I'll walk you to them and I'll show you all the cool things that we got because we thought of you. Now, if as Steve coming to an event, not knowing maybe me as a new development director or me as a board member, has coming up to saying, hey, I know what you've done for our organization. And hey, we specifically curated something for you, you dear person who's coming to our event, who loves our mission. And I've gone above and beyond. What does that make you feel inside rather than just going to, okay, I guess I'm going to go walk this aisle lonely and just check on things that I like? That personal touch using this whole bunch of technology.
Huge.
To make us better fundraisers down the line.
Huge. 100%.
Yeah, I love it. Okay. So I know we talked a lot about fundraising reports. I know we talked a lot about data. How on earth do we get this report? Do I have to pay $1 million for this? This seems like $1 million worth of value. What you do I get for the low, low price of?
You have to pay $0 American
what?
For this research report. I know. That's rare these days.
Yeah, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense as a business plan, everybody. What?
So if you just go to onecause.com /research, you're going to be on our main research page. You'll find the fundraising outlook there along with our other studies from past years, the giving experience study I mentioned. There are also blogs, infographics, videos related to all of that research. So tons of resources there for you to kind of download, take a look at. And of course, we're always here for questions. So if you have any, send them at hello@onecause.com. We're happy to answer them too.
We're going to have all of those links in the show notes per usual. And again, I know it sounds gushy, but there are very few organizations and very few individuals that we have in the podcast that I love as much as I do the One Cause family. And that's really what it is, too. And again, no shameless plug. I'm not even on the payroll. I just love I love you and your crew because as we sort of develop, relationships with clients and we're trying to figure out ways that they can fundraise better, it has been the solution that we have always recommended. And it's just wonderful to work with. And some of the best events and some of the best speakers happen at Raise, which is your gigantic fundraising conference every year. I would be remiss if we didn't plug that because you hang out at pretty cool places and you have pretty cool people hang out there. So where on earth is this? And when is this? So people can put it on their calendars too.
Sure. We're going to be back in Nashville at the Country Music Hall of Fame again this year, September 9th to 10th. So it's our encore performance. It sold out last year so quickly that we wanted to do it again and offer some more people the opportunity to come and experience that because I know I was a part of it, but wow, it was amazing.
It was epic. Let's just say it was epic.
Yeah, it was great. And I cannot wait to see that community of fearless fundraisers again, just having a blast while they're learning at the same time, but they're still kicking back and, letting their hair down a little bit. So it really was amazing to see.
It was ridiculous. And if you don't go, you're missing out on, I think the connections that you make with the people in the room, understanding that you're not alone in this particular fundraising journey. Yes, they're great speakers. Yeah, it's a part. Yes, it's fun. But you meet people that go, oh God, thank God. I'm not waking up in a cold sweat. And I'm not the only one doing this. And oh, by the way, I can get some connections and make my life a little easier, knowing that I've got somebody whose business card I have in my pocket that we talked about this idea and I can follow up. And everybody is so enthusiastic. And again, one of the things that I love about this too is that no person that you come up with to say, hey, I'd love to talk with you goes, I don't have time. Everybody. I've never experienced that at a conference before too, is that everybody's so enthusiastic about talking with you. And that goes back to in-person events are the thing that you need to look at, use some of these technologies that are available to you specifically. If you're looking at some AI stuff and specifically One Cause, use them to your advantage, raise a whole bunch of money this year, and then high five yourself and your board at the end of the year, because that's really what you need to do. So, Sarah, Steve, thank you again for sharing your insights and your awesomeness with us. Please, everyone at the podcast, get into the show notes, click and learn more about One Cause, go download the report. And if you've got any questions, we got an email address in the show notes too. Go ask them. They're going to be happy to do it. But thank you so much for joining us here again, here on the official Do Good Better podcast, friends.
Thank you. And we can't go without saying how much we appreciate you as well. So thanks for having us. And we love working with you as well. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Our pleasure.
All right. I'll keep that in the podcast for sure. see you guys later. Thank you so much. And we'll see you guys next time here on the official Do Good Better podcast. Fundraising is hard.
And as a listener to this podcast, I hope you found some insight, tips, and tricks on how to make it a little less challenging. But if you're looking for a lot more content, done-for-you templates, weekly support, and a community of other do-gooders like yourself to commiserate, challenge, co-create, or celebrate with, I want to invite you to join Do Good University. It's our brand new membership site. We're going to have hours of on-demand trainings, exclusive guest expert webinars, and access to the Do Good Better crew to answer all of your pressing questions, all for an affordable monthly fee. So visit dogooduniversity.com or click the link in the show notes